Hello, and welcome again to Parent is a Verb on OU Radio. I'm Dr. Barry Holzer.
And I'm Chani Holzer.
And we're here to talk about today...
Love them, don't indulge them. I think it's kind of a almost cultural norm today. You know, it's a little bit out of control where our children are products of our indulging them to the hilt. And I want to define and understand what indulging parenting means, or what the indulgent parent does. There are two types of indulgence, as I understand it. And the first one has to do with having a lot of money, or a false sense of having a lot of money, which really leads to credit card debt, and buying the kids whatever they want, just throwing a lot of stuff at them, because there's also a notion in our culture that kids have to be happy all the time. You know, if they're not happy, something's wrong. So if they're not happy and something's wrong, we better do something about it. And the best way to respond to that is by giving them stuff. And we've really, you know, in the past 25 to 30 years, I think it's easy enough to say that we've become part of a culture of the give-me's and acquiring and stuff.
Well, I think especially where you have more households where two parents are working, they're not around as much, they feel guiltier about not being there, and where you live in areas where other kids have lots of things.
Right.
It is become more difficult to set limits and easier to just give in and give.
Right. And then there's another type of overindulgent parent or parenting that requires no money at all. And that's the indulgence of being too much of a parent.
I think what we're talking about is giving permission on things too soon, allowing the children to set the rules. It's a parent's job to set limits and decide what's appropriate and what's not. So that it's a parent decides when the daughter gets to wear lipstick.
Right. And or it's, mom, everybody's going to that movie and mom's afraid of some sort of confrontation. So yeah, sure, go to the movie. Whether it's appropriate or not is, seems irrelevant. And the child gets to make the decision about going.
Everybody in my class has a cell phone.
Oh, everybody in my class has a cell phone. That's one of my favorites. Although that's something I feel a little differently about, because the way I'm looking at cell phones these days is more of a safety issue as opposed to more like everybody has a cell phone, so I need one.
Kids will often come with these requests, and parents' job is to make a decision, decide where to draw the lines, and the overindulgent parent lets the child basically decide. And if they want something, they generally get it.
I think there are also different types of indulging children. There are different types of indulgent parenting. And I kind of wanted to touch on that a little bit.
I think we can talk about a number of different types of parents and how they do it.
Okay. Right, the different styles of overindulgent parents. And the truth is that I think to some degree, I think I want to say this at the outset, is that we all have a little piece of this in us because we love our children so much and we want, as good parents, to take care of them so much and to be responsible. But what we're talking about is really any one or combination of these things in more of the extreme form.
Right. So, for example, what we were just talking about with a parent who gives in all the time is this giving parent, right, who compulsively gives in to every whim their child has. I want to go to, the store. I want to go buy the toy. I want this, and so they get lots of toys and lots of junk and lots of stuff.
Where it gets confused is if the parent only becomes the giving parent and doesn't take any other role, doesn't become a multidimensional parent who will sometimes say no, who will sometimes set limits, who will sometimes say, let's delay this and think about it for a day or two before we purchase this. We think about things before we buy them.
Right. And very often, parents have a hard time parenting because, they'll say a limit, but they won't stick to it. So they'll say, we're not going out for ice cream until after supper, and then the kid whines and they give in.
Well, you're jumping way ahead because that's really in how to undo all of this. Right now, that's a great point.
But that's a type of giving in that we're talking about. Now, there's other types of overindulgence.
Right, and that's, you know, one of the things that I like to call the stinkin' thinkin' parent. And that's, you know, really feeling very guilty because everybody else has it, or, you know, I'm working all the time, so I have to give my kid this because I have to give him something. I'm not there. And, you know, also I think giving to the child what they didn't have. So, you know, I didn't have this growing up. I never had, you know, when everybody else had skates, I couldn't have skates because my parents couldn't buy me skates. I'm going to buy them the skates. I'm going to buy them the scooter. I'm going to buy them anything with wheels.
Right.
Because
so,
I never had it.
Right. So this is all part of they're really giving too much. Okay. But there are, you know, when we talk about other types of giving, of indulging, okay, there are parents who just are afraid to confront their kids. Okay. So that, they remind them, they might give many reminders or warnings. Right? If you do that, you know, you're not going to get, if, but they never follow through. And so they keep giving them reminders, but it doesn't mean anything. And the kids know that it really doesn't mean anything. And these are parents who often are afraid to be rejected by their own children. They're trying too much to be liked by their children as opposed to be respected and to parent their children. And this is a very common issue today. There's a lot of parents that they lack the assertiveness, and parenting requires really setting limits and following through and having certain consequences. And
well, I think, you know, being afraid to parent and wanting to befriend your child is a whole other issue in this issue, and that's really becoming the buddy. And taken to the extreme, I just saw a case where there's a young lady who I'm working with whose father, so much instead of parenting her, was buddying her, that he, you know, they did drugs and alcohol together. And that's taking the buddy system to the extreme, but it does happen.
But also very often, Lee's, and I think we know parents like this, who either have blinders to their child's issues or problems, or glorify and exaggerate their positives so much that, you know, what you end up with is really very narcissistic reactions. In other words, if their child either can do no wrong or is the most brilliant and gifted, it seems like everybody has a gifted child today.
Yeah.
And there's this need for everybody to be the best, okay, and to be special at something.
And while it's okay to really work on the child's good qualities and notice them, this is, again, taken to the extreme where the child is overpraised and is overglorified, and there's no balance between being able to, you know, say something good about your child and being able to correct the things that need to be corrected.
And very often what's happened is the parent is living vicariously through the child. They want them to excel in a way that they couldn't. They want them to feel special in the way that they did not. And it makes the parent feel better and puts a lot of pressure on the child.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's very competitive often that child has to be better than the other kids. And often they'll always blame someone if their kids get into a fight. Right? They're always going to blame somebody else. It's always the other kid's fault.
Right. Or if the child gets a bad mark in school and the parent runs to school to correct that issue, it's the school's fault. It's not that my child actually earned the grade they deserved, but I got to do something about it. I got to fix it. It's not my kid. It's the school's fault.
And that leads us to sort of the next thing, which is really the blaming parent. Okay. That's, you know, they're protecting their children so much that they end up blaming everybody else. So the idea of a child accepting personal responsibility for what they did, whether it was on purpose or not, but saying, okay, I did this. It was an accident. It was a mistake. It was wrong. It was bad judgment. I apologize for it. I take responsibility for it. And we move on. With a blaming parent, right, they're already modeling for the child that it's not your fault. It's everybody else's fault. It really allows children to feel that they're not responsible.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, ultimately it doesn't allow the child to develop a moral conscience, which they need in order to grow up to be fair, decent human beings. If they never have to feel bad about anything they've done or any mistake they've made, well, where's the development of the moral conscience?
Now, sometimes parents can do this for one child versus the others. So they'll be the favorite child.
Right. And the favorite child is interesting. Sometimes, you know, if the parent has their own sense of, like, shyness, and there's a particularly shy child in the family, that the parent will kind of set themselves up closest to that shy child because, you know, it reminds them so much of themselves.
Or they might want to live vicariously through their gregarious child who has a ton of friends, and that really becomes the favorite child. And as much as parents say they don't play favorites and their kids, they never tell the kid they have a favorite, children know. And it becomes very obvious, and they over-identify with that child. You know, it's really the parents' issues that are being put onto their children.
Right. Their own issues are being played out in their children. And that goes back to a segment we had done a long time ago, kind of about consciousness around the way you were raised, so that you know what your injuries are, so that you can take care of your own injuries from your own childhood. And everybody has injuries of some sort from their childhood, aware of them or not. But they shouldn't get played out in the context of the family that you're trying to create.
Right.
You should be able to kind of get in touch with that and take care of that for yourself, with yourself.
Then there's also the others are, sometimes parents are overly responsible. As opposed to blaming everybody else for their child's errors, they blame themselves. And they never blame their child has no responsibility for their bad behavior or their misbehavior. It's, I'm responsible for what my child did.
Right. How about, you drop your kid off at school and then you happen to be passing by the school and you see like half a dozen cars parked outside of school. They all belong to parents. There's no parent meeting going on, but every single parent is busy bringing the hockey equipment to school because, oh, their kid forgot the hockey equipment at home.
And it's my fault because I didn't remind them, I didn't get it for them, I didn't do it for them.
And that really has happened. I've seen that.
Right. So whereas it might be okay to help out your kids, sometimes it's really okay to let them live with the consequences of their...
Right, because the truth is if they leave their hockey equipment at home and we don't deliver it to them in school, well, they may be much more aware of bringing their hockey equipment with them the next time because they couldn't play that night.
Right. Now, I will admit being guilty of running to school and bringing stuff that kids left at home.
Right. Again, but this is we're talking about in the extreme cases.
Right. But it depends, again, the degree. Okay. If a kid is generally responsible and occasionally forgets something and you have the ability to help them out, that's a very nice thing they'll appreciate. But if you're constantly running and doing for them, and they lose any sense of personal responsibility.
And doesn't create within them the capacities they need to have responsibility for themselves, to take care of themselves.
Right. And then finally, you have the parents who have their own issues with anger and rage. They're often either verbally or physically abusive. And they yell at the kids or they hit the kids, and then they feel guilty. So then after, you know, they calm down, right, then they feel, you know, they're blaming themselves, right? And it creates a lot of confusion and difficulty for children. And it's certainly that type of environment is not a healthy environment for children. That's like this most obvious situation where a parent really needs to get help for themselves. And help is really available. And so when parents have issues like that, it's not uncommon for them to respond to their own abuse by being overly nice and good and trying to buy the kids caring back.
Right. Or another example I thought of from my own practice is the parent who got divorced and they feel like, you poor thing, you have to live in a home where, you know, your parents don't live together. So if that's all my fault, I chose to do that. So I'm going to overindulge you. I'm going to give you and give you and give you because you poor baby, you don't have two parents in your house. And that was all my fault.
I think these are all significant types of things that parents do that create, you know, that really create this overindulgence and create issues for the child. Well, what is the result when parents do this? What happens as a result?
Well, I think, you know, first and foremost, there's a certain overdependency on parents that gets created because, you know, mom and dad are doing everything for him. Mom and dad are making sure he has his homework. Let's get everything faxed to you. Mom and dad are chronically bringing the equipment to school. Mom and dad aren't giving you any chores because you can't handle anything. You can't do anything except exactly what's in front of you. So there's an excessive dependence on parents and other people.
I see. So it sounds like the kids don't believe they can do on their own. They don't really develop a sense of themselves.
And sometimes that leads to anger and resentment issues also.
What do you think they get most angry about?
I think being, you know, past a point when you feel so overdependent on your parent, it can cause an enormous amount of anger. Your parents always in your face, especially as adolescents. You know, the kids, the flip side of doing too much for your kid is that you think the kid's going to love you to pieces, but the kid's actually going to really, the child will actually resent you because you're constantly there for him and he's not doing anything for himself. You're always in his face. You're always there for him.
So I guess what happens is instead of having a balance of being able to taking care of oneself and being concerned for others, right, I feel like I can't take care of myself and I'm not concerned for others. Right? It's all about me, and I can't be concerned with anyone else.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the child is also never taught that this is what you need to do to make amends with people. These are the skills that you need.
And I don't learn self-reliance. I don't learn that I can take care of myself.
Now, I think it creates a lot of helplessness, the learned helplessness model, which is, you know, I've been taught that I can't do it.
Right.
It's the no-can-do philosophy.
A false inflated sense of self, inflated self-esteem. You know, when we talked about self-reliance, we talked about the problem of false self-esteem that we do in this country. And this is, you know, very often, you know, I think what happens is that, you know, we just keep telling kids you're perfect and wonderful. You're the best when they're not the best. They're okay.
And you know, I think past a point, children stop believing their parents when they're told all the time that they're the best because they know it's not true. They might be good, but they're not the best 100% of the time.
And, you know, then it's very hard for them when they do get constructive criticism. You know, if the coach tries to teach them how to hit better, they don't want to listen because I already know. So you get these kids who know everything and have a very hard time learning new things, especially if it's not easy to learn. So it affects them as students and it affects them interpersonally and their ability to really learn from others and take supervision and learn, you know, and constructive criticism.
Right. Well, there's no building of good relational skills either because it's, you know, there's a certain interdependency that needs to take place within the context of relationships, you know, and being able to be nice to somebody else and make room for somebody else so that you can have a relationship. There's no room for that. This has been all about me, 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 and I haven't had to take into consideration that there might be somebody else.
Is there anything else that you think is a really important issue that parents have to recognize when they overindulge children?
Well, I think, you know, to kind of a little bit on a different vein, it's a loss of age-appropriate skills. It's like, you know, the child should be learning how to set their lives up for themselves so that they can function. I think one of the things I heard recently, it was a very interesting expression, is the teacup child. A lot of college administrators now are talking about the teacup child, which I was very curious about. What is the teacup child? And clearly it's the child who's been put in a break front and on display his whole life, has never had to really do anything. So like a teacup, he's very fragile, and put on his own, or having to be used, or having to do anything outside of this protective break front that he's been put in, he cracks, he breaks, he chips, he can't function. The college administrators are talking very much about this new teacup syndrome person coming to college.
It reminds me of the cartoon I saw a few years back, probably many years back, about this like 5-year-old child being carried out of the limousine into the hotel, and the person's asking the parent standing there, can't she walk? And the father answers, thank God she doesn't have to.
Yeah, that's the piece. But it's really what we're doing a tremendous disservice to our children that way, because they lack the ability to cope in the real world. And in the real world, there are unpleasant things that happen, and we should be allowing our children to be experiencing unpleasant emotions.
Right. And as part of that is the whole idea of unconditional love. I feel most loved, especially when things do go wrong. Okay? I want to feel loved even though I did something wrong, I got blamed for it, I got punished for it, I feel bad, and I'm loved either way. And what happens to a lot of these kids is the expectations are, and the fantasy is that I never do anything wrong. And they're so afraid that if they're going to do something wrong, they really won't be loved. And the way they think is that I have to be perfect in order to be for my parents to care about.
And you don't think that builds up resentment in a person? That's the buildup of resentment right there.
And so these are very significant issues that we can create on our children by this type of approach and this type of parenting. Okay. So, this type of self-centeredness, anger, lack of motivation, this really spoiled behavior, difficulty with boundaries, difficulty dealing with emotions and any type of emotional pain, isolation, lonely feelings of isolation, loneliness, it's hard for them to learn to connect.
Right. Well, I think also, when you're not allowed to feel, or you're made to feel like, there are no bad emotions to be had. So, if something bad happens, the typical case of, God forbid, there's a loss in the family. Well, the way we take care of the child is not about setting up, an appropriate place and space for him to grieve. No, we don't want him to feel bad. So we're just going to make him happy, happy, happy. It's inappropriate for anyone who's grieving a loss to be forced to feel happy.
No. And so I think if we were going to sum it up, the overindulgent parent leads the symptoms in the child of lack of self-esteem, lower cognition, they don't do as well, lower levels of individuation, they don't have a sense of self, lower levels of social consciousness, they're a sense of giving to others and responsibility for others, their sense of arvos is diminished. Lower levels of autonomy, their sense of their own ability to do is limited. It gets disrupted. Their ability, their sense of self-control is impaired. And very often these are the kids who, we call spoiled, have an obnoxious attitude, ill-tempered behavior, and because they always got away with it, they feel it's okay because nobody ever told them it wasn't.
And they're really not used to hearing the word no.
Right. So they end up with this sense of entitlement and lacking the social skills and, a sense of balance and boundaries. And they can't really deal with the emotional pain, so that their ability to connect in relationships becomes impaired as well.
Right. And, I think what I'd like to kind of, our next phase of this is discussed is really, so what can parents do? If you find yourself falling into any of these categories in an extreme kind of way, is there anything that can be done to correct some of that? And the truth is, I think there are many parents who are wonderful parents, and this isn't really their case. And yet, there might be like one of these things that you kind of like lean a little bit on the heavy side towards without really having realized it or knowing that it could cause, such difficulties for the child. Because really, every parent looks at their child as wanting the best for them. So sometimes wanting the best for them isn't always giving them everything or giving them, you know, or overprotecting them. So I think, you know, one of the first and foremost in terms of, you know, painful emotions is don't soothe children's painful emotions with toys and luxuries. You know, replace that with advice, with affection, with some place to talk about how they're feeling. Give them the vocabulary they need for how they might be feeling inside. It's okay to talk about being sad when you've lost somebody. It's okay to be, you know, to feel unsafe because you've lost someone you love. That's appropriate. It's inappropriate to, you know, to replace those feelings or to teach the child that they need to replace those feelings with toys.
Right. You want to help your child to manage and deal with emotions and deal with pain. You don't want to make believe it's not there or give them the message that they don't really feel this way.
Right.
Okay. And try to erase it.
And I think that's, you know, there's a lot of good material out there on, you know, grieving and what the grieving process is all about. But first and foremost, I think just giving vocabulary words for what grief feels like. Okay. Grief hurts the body. Grief, you know, makes you feel sad, makes you feel unsafe. All of those vocabulary words and making time and space for that. And, I think moving on, knowing that parenting isn't a popularity contest. You are not your child's buddy. Okay. But I also want to say at the same time, you can have buddy moments. Okay. You can have moments where you're doing something together, like washing a car, and we're buddies. We're having a great time together.
Or you know, mom and girls go for manicures together. You know, there's stuff you can do with your kids that's appropriate, but your goal is not to be your kid's buddy. Your goal, first and foremost, is to be their parent.
Right, because as a parent, you are legally responsible for your child. So, you know, if things escalate to the point where they have no moral conscience and they're really getting into trouble, well, that the buddying was not appropriate.
Right. And then no means no. I always tell parents, you can decide what the bedtime is. You can decide, you know, what the curfew is. You can decide. And I don't tell parents what to pick. Okay? I tell the kids, okay, whatever your parents decide, that's what they decided. That's what it is. But once you've decided, that's it. The line is drawn, and you can't keep pushing the line back. You've said it, and you've got to be firm about it. You can't allow your child to manipulate you, right? Because they're, you know, and make you feel guilty about what you decided. I don't care if they have a curfew that's an hour earlier than everybody else.
Well, and I think what I want to add to that, you know, on that same wavelength, is letting the emotional sting of discipline happen. The emotional sting has a lesson. There shouldn't be any whittling down of appropriate discipline. So let's just say the child has broken a rule. You know, let's say the child has taken the car out. The teenager has taken the car when they weren't given permission. And let's just say they even damaged the car somewhat. They didn't damage, God forbid, themselves or anyone else, but they've damaged the car. And the response is, well, okay, no car and you're grounded. You're not going out of the house for the next week. Oh, but Saturday night I have my best friend's birthday party. Okay, so Saturday night you can go out, but don't whittle down the punishment. Let the sting of the punishment be felt. That's important. There's a lesson in that.
Right. And they have to deal with the responsibility and the result of their actions. So if they're going to miss something that's important to them, they're going to miss something that's important to them. That's the way it's going to be.
And I think also teaching children, you know, even more than discipline, is guiding them to make amends and recognizing when they've done wrong and teaching them how to make amends. Teaching them that it's really very important to say, I'm sorry, to somebody else. You've hurt someone's feelings. It's okay. It's really okay to say, I'm sorry. It's a very important thing. It's actually a very Jewish concept to have remorse and then to ask for forgiveness.
And really helping your child do that, I think, is very important. And you want to model that for them as well. You know, it's okay if you have reacted, you know, harshly, inappropriate, whatever, to say, you know, to apologize even to your kids. But that doesn't mean that, you know, therefore anything goes. You know, just because my reaction wasn't the best doesn't mean I have to now compensate and let them do whatever they want.
Right, and I think, you know, there are a couple of other suggestions that I think are kind of interesting and creative. There should be one television per household. You know, six televisions all over the house isn't going to create better family gathering time. Having one television where everyone can get together and watch a movie together on a Sunday night, and we have family time together watching a movie, is putting the family in a better place. There should be no televisions or internet in the children's bedroom. Put them in the community part of the house. That creates better family health overall, better gathering experiences. And there can be family hobbies. There was a case I came across recently. We call him the Harley guy. It's this father who had several sons, and he loved motorcycles. So what he did was he bought an old, dilapidated, falling apart, rusty Harley. His kids looked at it and they said, "This is a piece of junk. We don't have anything to do with it." And he said, "Yeah, really, we can make this piece of junk into a piece of gold." And this family went about reconstructing this vintage Harley into something that was gorgeous. And it was a process. It was a family bonding. They looked up where they could buy parts. They shined the things that could be shined. They painted the things that could be painted. It was a beautiful family bonding experience. It was a beautiful, using a hobby as a bonding experience.
Right. I think any time you can work with your children and challenge them, instead of giving to them, challenge them to see what they can do. Expect from them. Don't give to them.
In terms of, I want to address the money issue and you know, giving monetarily. A lot of parents are in debt from this. Don't have debt. It will buy you more time with your children. Eliminate debt. And it competes with children. It competes with the time that you could be spending with them.
Because when you're worried about the debt or you're running to another job because of the debt, you're not spending time with your kids. And your time and your being there is much more important to them in the long run than the things you get them. No matter how much they tell you that everybody has the $115 sneakers and everybody has these clothes and these things and they need, they really can survive without and they'll be better for it. We hope this has been helpful to you. Certainly a balanced approach to parenting, which, you know, at times will indulge and at times will be so, you know, a little, you know, overly strict, but most of the time is balanced, is really what we're trying to achieve. And living in a culture that tends to lean towards overindulgence, we really want to be cognizant of that. Each of us has to be aware of when am I falling into this trap and, you know, think about what can I do to make my child's experience a better experience. Thank you for joining us today at OU Radio with Parent is a Verb. Please send your questions or suggestions to parentisaverb@ou.org.